I chose to learn about love through heartache. It's not that there's a right or wrong. It says I have a choice now to learn about love through something different. So yeah, that you always have a choice. There's always a choice, and you may not feel like there's a choice. You may feel like you're stuck, that you're trapped. You're not stuck and you're trapped. You're getting up, you're brushing your teeth. You know, that's proof that you're not stuck, but you can choose to change this trajectory of your life. And there's a huge upside.
Welcome, you wonderful, purposeful, and beautiful humans to Hope Still Wins. I'm your host, Ben Higgins. Hope Still Wins is a place where we get to know thought leaders from diverse backgrounds and differing worldviews to help us feel less alone, more connected, and move us to become a better world together. Ultimately answering the question, does hope still win? If so, why? And if not, why not? And right now, we are in the middle of a series where I have the honor of interviewing incredible humans to see how hope has played a role in their story when life takes an unexpected turn, from life-altering diagnosis and adversity to loss of a loved one, bankruptcy, and beyond. We're going to cover it all. In today's episode, we get to hear from Susie Batiz, the founder of the wildly popular brands Poopery, Supernatural, and Alive OS. Susie's story is one with many twists and turns. And in this episode, she shares what it means to rise up from the ashes, to find empowerment, to turn from the victim mindset. And she also speaks to all of us who have dealt with pain, who have sat in pain. She's encouraged us that yes, there is a heaven beyond the pain, but she also relates to us in our pain. I believe it's an incredible episode. She is absolutely spectacular for this series on healing. Also, you're going to find her answer to, does hope still win? Very interesting. Well, hey, let's jump into it. On this episode of Hope Still Wins, here's my conversation with Susie Batiz. Susie, thank you so much for joining Hope Still Wins.
Yeah, thank you. I'm excited to be here, Ben.
Oh, I'm so pumped for you to be here. I've been a fan of the things that you've done for a while, even though I didn't know the backstory. But I really appreciate the stuff you're putting into this world. It's useful in my home.
Yes, yes, yes. Taking care of a lot, covering up a lot of shit, right?
That's right. I'm sure you said that one or two times. You know, I really want to start this, Susie, because I believe a lot of people know of your products, but I don't know if they know your story. And this whole series that we're doing right now is on healing and healing from life's greatest adventures. And you've gone through a lot of them. And if you don't mind, I would like to start this episode out by explaining who you are and maybe some of the big pivotal moments in your life that have got you to this point.
Yeah, so I'm the CEO, currently the CEO of Poopery, Supernatural, and Alive OS, which is a personal development program. And some pivotal moments. I live in Dallas, Texas, which is exciting. I grew up in Jonesboro, Arkansas, so I'm a Southern girl at heart. You take a girl out of the South, but you can't take it out of the girl, right?
Yeah.
And I grew up in what people would probably call a challenging life up until 38 years old. I'll go through a little bit of that right now. My dad was a bipolar alcoholic. My mother depressed on pain pills. My first memory was cooking for my parents at 4 years old. So I always had the sense of responsibility. They got divorced when I was 10. I was actually excited about that, Ben. So imagine what kind of situation it must have been in to be excited at 10 years old. Your parents are divorcing. I thought, that's it. We're finally going to be free of all the screaming and fighting. And then my mother married my stepdad, and I was molested by my stepdad for about four years. And then I was raped at 16. I was married, bankrupt, and divorced by the time I was 20 years old. I tried to kill myself at 21. I was pregnant in an abusive marriage at 22, escaped that at about 28 years old, with two children in tow. And I met this amazing, wonderful, really poor drummer that I thought, this is amazing. He has no money. Wonderful musician. We had another child together. We had a daughter. And I had a gazillion businesses in between then. I was selling shit out of the trunk of my car. I sold truckloads of gearboxes, fabric, just doing, I was a hustler. Okay. Like I always had a side hustle and three side hustles going, because I really thought that money was going to get me out, right, of my situation, make me feel worthy in the world. And then when I was 38 years old, I had my second bankruptcy. And that one really flattened me. I thought that I went into the deepest state of depression I've probably been in my entire life. Even though I spent years depressed in my early 30s, I was on Zoloft for 7 years, had postpartum depression after I had my daughter. But this depression was a really big one. And that sent me straight into a spiritual sabbatical for about 4 years. Really looking inside, realizing that there were things that happened in my life and that I was the common denominator between them. So I started looking at how did I create some of that, which is like, right? When you're in such a victim mindset for so many years, you know, my first 38 years, it's substantial. And then to kind of figure out that I maybe had something to do with it was a complete radical shift in my life.
There's so much there to break down. And it's why you're the perfect guest to talk about healing. And you know, when we think of healing, oftentimes we think we heal and we move on and then everything's fine. But for you, there's so many moments where pain was caused and you got back up again. And like you said, you're selling stuff out of your car. And then you hit, at 38, you hit your greatest level of depression. I want to ask, in the midst of this greatest feeling of depression, how did you find the confidence and the willingness to look within, and what spurred that on?
Yeah, such a great question. I went to a friend of mine. I'd never been in therapy in my life, believe it or not. I mean, all the things I'd been through, no one actually said go to a therapist. You know, it wasn't even a part of my reality. And after that bankruptcy, someone said they had a friend that was a hypnotherapist. So I went to him and told him, you know, my big sad story. And he said, you know what your problem is you have no meaning in your life. And I literally said, what are you talking about? I have kids. And he said, no, I mean, no connection to some higher power. So he gave me the book, Man's Search for Meaning from Viktor Frankl. And I had turned my back on religion. I grew up really conservative Christian, Church of Christ. You know, you're basically going to hell for everything. You're just going to hell. Yeah. That's it.
Have fun. Enjoy it. Yeah,
exactly. So I'd really turned my back on really structured religion early on and was really dissociated from any sort of spiritual life. And I read that book and it radically changed my entire existence. I kind of was like, whoa, okay, hold on. So I started diving into religions. I started studying Buddhism, Hinduism. I was a Kabbalist for a few months. I started reading a lot about metaphysics. So I really dove into religion. As we say it, just really trying to figure out what was going on. And nothing was really changing in my life. And I got to that moment that you hear a lot of people do. I still get teary to this day. Like right now, it's brings up a lot for me. I got to that moment where my feng shui, you know, master friend had told me I can't live in my house. It's death and destruction. I was turning my bed every night. I would not make a call without the numerology being right. I had given up so much power in my life that everything was astrology, numerology, feng shui. I was using all external resources to try to give me some feeling of power. And I saw this book at a shop one day, and it was Byron Katie, Loving What Is. And I was just like, yeah, right. You know, how can you love this, right? Like I'm literally in the worst state of my life. And, well, let me back up. So 2 days before I saw the book, I got on my knees and I told God, like, you've got to take me. Like, I'm done. Like, I'm really done. I'm not going to kill myself because I have children and I wouldn't do that to them. But you need to give me a disease. You need to give me cancer. You need to take me because I really can't do this life anymore. And it was that moment of just complete, like, I was, you can't be any more done and surrendered than I was. And then 2 days later, I saw that book, Loving What Is. 2 weeks later, I was at her 10-day workshop. And doing her process called The Work. And I started unhooking some of these belief systems in my mind, and that became the greatest catalyst in my healing and growth, was starting to, and I'm talking radical healing, Ben. Okay. When you have, you know, Byron Katie looking at you and I'm talking about sexual molestation, and she said, "Did you say no?" And this sometimes triggers people. People are like, "What are you talking? You know, you were a kid." You know, they get really triggered, and I understand. But what people don't understand is when I was able to own, like, hold on, like, there is a world where I could have said no, it started opening up another perspective, and I started getting my power back, right? Because before, I was only a complete victim. At that point, I started going, hold on, I can start saying no now, right? I can't go back and change that, but I can bring that. And I started getting my power back slowly and surely. And then I became to the most peaceful state I'd ever been in, happy, no desire for money. Oh, I kept doing her work for about 3 years and working with a somatic therapist, a body-centered therapist. And I was just sitting at home in bliss. I had zero desire for money, zero desire for any sort of success. There was literally nothing external that could fulfill me more than I already was in myself. And that was, you know, right before Poo-Pourri.
Let's talk about it for a second, because you brought it up, that moment for you to get your power back. I think that's such a powerful statement. As that process started to happen, what were the emotions kind of wrapped around it? Were you scared? Was it like an immediate freedom for you? Or were there things like along the way that did set you back again and did trigger you again? Like, how did you work through the process of getting your power back when there's so much pain still associated with it?
Yeah. When she first said that, there was immediate, like stopping, like a deer in the headlights, like, what? You know, such a radical concept. And then as I felt in with the question, I was like, no, I didn't. And then the biggest feeling of liberation, it was wild. It was literally like, oh my God, I never said no. You know, and then people, like I said, people are like, well, you know, you were a child, you couldn't do that. I get all of that, right? It's true. Had I been raised in different circumstances, I could have, but it's just the concept that I could have said no that helped free me. And then we just kept doing, for example, with my abusive marriage, you know, and she's like, okay, so he hit you once. And I'm like, yeah. She's like, and you stay. Yep. He hit you twice and you stay. Yep. He hit you three times and he stays. You stay. I'm like, yeah. And she said, if I had a lion in a cage and if I put my hand in it, bit me, you know, shame on me. Put my hand in again and it bit me, you know, it's like, okay, hold on. And if you do it the third time, at what point is it your responsibility, right? Because you know what you're dealing with. And even that concept, instead of I was physically abused by this person, really tortured, it's like, how much did I allow that by my own co-creation, right, with that? So once I could start owning that, I started getting my power back. Like, oh, hold on, I have choices now whether to be in an abusive relationship or not. Yes, I've done a lot of healing since then, but also that concept that I could have had something to do with it. See, the problem in the I forget the triangle, it's a very common triangle, the perpetrator, victim, hero. It's the, I forget the name of the guy, but it's a very Cartman's triangle. The problem with that is you're always in one position on that same triangle. You're either the hero or you're the perpetrator or you're the victim, right? There's no way out. So what happened is when I started questioning my thoughts, I was not in the triangle at all. I wasn't even the hero. I was literally, the triangle was gone. And it's like, oh, hold on. If I could start creating my reality, if I created that, by just not saying no, if I created that by staying, what can I create by making different choices? So I was healing slowly along the way as I was making better choices as well. So that was the path. And it's been 18 years. And I built my business mainly, anybody that knows me closely knows that really personal development is and healing is my first priority. And I happen to run a business, you know, but that's also a part of my healing as well. Things show up in the business that'll show you belief systems that you had when you were a child.
I from everything I've read about you, I know that the healing of yourself and others is vitally important to everything that you do. You spend a lot of your time doing that. We're going to get into that in just a second. I do want to ask for your opinion, because you're big on wisdom. You learn through wisdom is a statement that I've heard you make before multiple times. And as we've done this podcast, and I've gotten to hear stories similar to yours, or have touch points the same touch points as yours, and one of the things that is most difficult is recognizing when you're in an environment or you're in a triangle that is unhealthy, that you should just separate yourself from and walk away from. If there's somebody out there listening who's hearing this and who has a similar story to yours, but is going, I can't quite identify yet if I should leave or not, or if I should walk away for not, or if what is the right decision here for me, what would you say to them?
Yeah, I would say first, just really start feeling your energy. You know, I teach a lot in Alive OS about resonance and dissonance. Dissonance is when two energy waves are just, it's not bad person, good person. It's two energy waves that just aren't the same, right? They're not vibrating at the same wavelength and the same frequency. So those two energy waves together create less energy than they do apart. So you're literally, those people that say this job's killing me, this relationship's killing me, there's actually a lot of truth to that, because their life force energy is actually reduced. So first of all, start noticing your body. How do you feel? Do you feel exhausted? I just did that with, there were some meetings at my office, and I just called one of my executives and I said, I'm never going into those meetings again. I will have them once a month. You'll give me reports. Like, I literally am so drained at the end of it. So I start noticing my body. So I would notice your body. Then I would feel into, what are you getting out of it? Does it remind you of something in your childhood, right? Is it a pattern? Because we actually are just these patterns that were, you know, our lives were created through programming. That's the truth. You know, you watch The Matrix or in these movies, it sounds woo-woo, but you know, but when, you know, your parents tell you don't do this, you know, teacher, sit up straight, follow the line, do right, all of that is programming. And we think we're supposed to do it because that's what we're taught, but not all of that programming actually serves you. Now, the wonderful part about that is once you can start seeing the patterns, if something happens three or more times in your life, it's not a coincidence. It is absolutely a pattern. Then if it's a pattern, you can actually go in and consciously start shifting that. You can be like, oh, I want to make a different choice. This reminds me of my father. I was just in love with a rock star last year. And the funny thing about that is it was such a relationship with my father. So I got to go in and heal a lot of my father wounds, you know, all of that. And it was amazing, you know. So instead of me being a victim of, I was in this relationship with what some would call a dysfunctional rock star, it's like I was, and I fell madly in love, but what was I in love with? I was actually in love with the pain that I had from my father. So you can go back and you can start looking at, where's that programming come from? And then you can actually write new programs on top of it. EMDR, hypnosis, and somatic body-centered therapy. The Amen Clinic told me, actually change your brain. So you can start physically. So this isn't just psychological. This is actually creating new structures in your brain that will create new patterns, because your external world is only a reflection of your internal world, period. Well, period.
and I mean that, and that brings up the point of like the pains of your past then. And so as you look back now, and you see the patterns in your life, and you see the pains in your life, and the things that were unfair to be done to you, but also the things now that you've owned, and you said, no, there's a life beyond this. This is not gonna crush me. How do you view those pains? How do you view the past circumstances and the things that did put you into depression and did force you to have a divorce and file for bankruptcy? How do you view that stuff now?
I view it as some of the greatest blessings. What we fail to remember, I believe, as a society, and especially Western civilization, is we think there should be no bad, right? Everything should be good. Everything should be rainbows and unicorns and fairies. But the reality is we live in duality. And in duality, there is equal good and bad. That's the way of it. You can't believe in angels if you don't believe in demons, right? It's like, yes, there's non-dual teachings and non-dual, but within our current, the dimension we live in, there is duality. So you have to take the bad with the good. Every single good has a bad. Let's say wealth. You know, people are like, oh my God, it's so amazing. Wealth, there's a lot of work you have to do with money, right? And what am I going to do with it? How am I going to invest in it? Can I keep it? Can I not keep it? You know what I'm saying? So everything is balanced. So when you look back at those times in your life, so if you look at my first 38 years, we would consider that bad. But you look at the next 38, you would consider good. It's literally balance. So not one is any better than the other. They both serve each other. So I just went through probably one of the hardest years I've had last year. And the whole time I was going through it, what I realized is that there is another side to this. The deeper you dive, the higher you rise. So I would dive into it. I just did a lot of work. I thought, here we are. This is it. Astrologically speaking, it was called Hades. My Pluto was in transit. If anybody ever tells you that, you probably need to buckle up. But what I realized is, okay, I'm here. Was it tough? It was really tough. And what I knew, what I believe you talk about, Ben, with hope, is I knew there was another side, because that's the way the universe works. There has to be balance. And if you focus and go into it, you can actually, the depths you go to on what we consider negative, you can actually rise just as high on the opposite. It's the law of rhythm in Hermeticism. It's as above, so below. It's a pendulum swing. It has to swing back the other way. So I just kept that in my mind and kept going through.
You know, it's one of the ways, and it's always fun for me, because, you know, spirituality plays a big part in this. And as a Christian myself, and we have guests from all different belief systems, there's some language that I like to use that I believe is relatable. And I'm always careful in how I say it, but we talk about the value in a human being, the value in the life that we get to live. And as I hear you talk, I'm hearing you speak to it, because if you don't believe you have any value, then there's no reason for you to dive deep and to rise up, because you don't believe you can. You don't believe it's there. So one of the reasons that we do this, and we interview people from all different backgrounds and all different belief systems, because at the end of it, if one person looked at me and said, hey, I've listened to this, and now I just feel like I have value to move on, to move forward, to fight for something better, then it's all been worth it. Mm-hmm. And that's why I want to ask my question to you. Your message to those who are hurting. We just talked about it a little bit ago, but your overall message to those, to speak into the value, to speak into diving into the depths and to coming back out of it, to leaning into some of the pain and learning and growing from it. What would be your message to those people?
Yeah, that you always have a choice. When I see someone, I remember I was at this, you know, some workshop, I've done a million. And this girl was, you know, crying, saying that, you know, she had an abusive alcoholic father and how horrible her life is. And all I thought was, man, when she decides to heal, she's got a big old upside coming, right? That's naturally the way I think. It's like, okay, yeah, you've been through hell. Well, guess what's the opposite of hell? Heaven, right? You can actually experience that, but you have a choice. You have a choice to heal, and you can start healing at any moment. You know, you have a choice to start recognizing you can change the trajectory of your life, no matter where you're at. You could be in prison and you actually can live in heaven, right? It depends on that choice that you make in that moment. So that's what I would say, is you always have a choice. You have a choice to suffer. You have a choice to be in pain. I was recently with one of my friends. He's a different type of musician. And I was telling him how much I learned about love through heartache. And he said, well, yeah, but why don't you just learn about love through love? And I was like, wow. So again, I chose to learn about love through heartache. It's not that there's a right or wrong. It says I have a choice now to learn about love through something different. So yeah, that you always have a choice. There's always a choice, and you may not feel like there's a choice. You may feel like you're stuck, that you're trapped. You're not stuck and you're trapped. You're getting up, you're brushing your teeth. You know, that's proof that you're not stuck, but you can choose to change this trajectory of your life. And there's a huge upside.
This week's episode of Hope Still Wins is brought to you by Generous International. Generous International is a company that I co-founded. Generous donates 100% of profits to nonprofits fighting human-facing injustice. So every bag of coffee bought, every cup of coffee drink is going back to make the world a better place. Generous is best known for selling coffee, specialty grade coffee. So it's some of the best coffee in the world. You're going to drink coffee anyways, and like we like to say, why not make it life-changing coffee? Well, you can visit Generous at generouscoffee.com. Please go out today and check out Generous Coffee. You're big on speaking to and teaching from a place of the luxury of losing everything.
Yes.
You called it blessings a little bit ago.
Yes.
And gifts to you. And I'm curious, at to what point in your life did you start viewing losing everything as a luxury? When did this come a thing that you became so at peace with, but also so, I don't want to say proud of, but that you looked at it with such positivity?
Yeah, I think that I've always been a positive thinker. That's how I got through everything I did. I had someone interviewing me for my story a couple of years ago, and he, about halfway in, I was talking about my suicide attempt. He goes, "Let me guess, the good news is," and I looked at him, I said, "What are you talking about?" He said, "Do you realize that every tragic story you tell me, you always say, but the good news is." So I've naturally always harvested out of adversity, try to extract the good, right? Again, trying to balance it all out. I think that sometimes that justified a lot of it, but I was always naturally trying to do that. But really, when I was 38 and lost what I considered everything, which I put my fingers in quotations right now, you know, as if your house and your cars and money is everything, right? You know, I had my family, I had my health, I had so many things that are so much more valuable, but in my mind, I lost everything. And sometimes if we don't stop ourselves, God will come in and stop us dead in our tracks. And I needed to be stopped. The trajectory I was on had lasted for 38 years. Like, it was like there's was be no end to it. So that's what I call the luxury. Rarely do we get those dead stops that stop us in our tracks. And that did that. And I think that's actually a luxury. Now, again, I don't think we have to do that. A lot of us will create bankruptcies, illness, we'll create divorces, we'll create these things to, you know, or God creates it, whatever your belief system is, they will happen so that you change the trajectory of where you're going. And that actually is a luxury. Thank God somebody stopped me.
But and within that, I want to just note, you have to be willing then in those moments to lean in and to learn, which I think is so vital to why you're such a good guest during this series, is because I know in my own life, many times, I mean, July of last year was one of the hardest months, a couple months I've ever had. And there was, I've always told myself and others on this podcast and other places, like, hey, when pain happens, you know, there's great things to come. You're going to learn from this. There's some of the greatest moments in my life. I've learned from some of the biggest pains. And I stopped doing that. I became a victim. I laid back. I let the pain overwhelm me, and I was incapable of seeing anything greater or learning from any of it.
Yeah.
And that's why I think you're such a powerful voice during this, is because you've said, hey, and tell me if I'm wrong. This wasn't always your mindset. This wasn't always the way you dealt with pain. Mm-hmm. That for you, for a long time, you didn't see it as something to learn from and to grow from and to rise out of.
Oh no, I knew it was, I thought I was a complete victim, you know, and I was lost so much in the victim mindset, which again is a whole other energetic pattern that just keeps spiraling, you know, it's a victim for this. And all of a sudden my transmission would get out, you know, would break, and then I didn't have any money for it. And then I couldn't feed my kids. And it was like, it was literally like this tumbling, but it is a vibration that I was putting out, because that's where I was living in, is that life is hard and life just keeps doing this to me. Instead of like, hold on, what am I doing? You know, what's going on here? Oh, I'm living above my means. You know, there's actually some practical things that we are creating some of our circumstances. And it's like, can we get down and look at that? But then also, like, for example, I was teaching a live OS when I went down this past year, about the same time as you. And I told everyone around me, like, listen, I'm going down. Okay. Like, I'm really suffering right now. I'm having a really hard time. What I know is I will come out of it, but I need you guys to know that right now I am really suffering, and I'm just going to be here suffering. I'll let you know when things shift and change. And it was the acceptance. If you look at, there's a scale of consciousness by, I forget the book, but anyway, and the acceptance is what starts lifting you up into a greater, into peace, love, you know, happiness and joy, right? It's the accepting of. So I accepted that I was in a bad place first. Then once I accepted it, I could fully feel it. And then I could start making moves and therapies and different modalities to start shifting that, to start feeling more peace, love, happiness and joy. But if we don't accept where we're at and what's going on, if we're in denial, that'll never shift.
But at the same breath, then, for the people that you told, hey, I'm going to be here suffering. I know I'm in it. And that's about all I can put around it. There's not a lot of words I can use for it right now, but I'm just in it suffering. Mm-hmm. Was the acceptance of the people you told also important to you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. They didn't try to shift it, change it, try to get me out of it, you know. I would just be like, this is where I'm at. I'm going to be going in. I have my therapist, I have my support team, and I'm in it. And I'll let you know. It was really good, because sometimes if people try to, come on, you can do it, get out, be in a good mood, it's like, you know, that's the worst thing to do, especially with, like, with someone's grieving, right? If they're grieving a death or something, it's like, come on, you got to feel the sadness, and you should feel sad. You know, it's a very valid feeling to be sad and in grief. There is a point to, you know, depending on how close the relationship is, where that will start shifting. But, you know, if you've lost a mother or father or a really close relationship, you shouldn't be feeling great the month after. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like you're grieving. So I believe in fully allowing those feelings that I used to consider suffering. It's just grieving, and it's just sadness, and it's okay too.
In the last few minutes here, I want to switch gears for just a second and talk about the concept of hope with you, because you have in your work a lot of great things to say about it, or a lot of interesting things to say about it. You mentioned a little bit ago, you're well-practiced in the realm of spirituality and religion. You've explored, you've dove in multiple ways to connect with God. How would you, if you don't mind, define your walk with God today?
I feel like it's a very intimate, it's a relationship that's very similar to a mother, father, parent relationship, and that the relationship is so intimately connected that it's hard to separate from. It just is. Right? So I don't have to explain that there's a God. I don't have to explain that I have a mother or that I have a father. It just is, right? Yeah. So that's the way I would explain it.
It's beautiful. Well, final question before our final question for you. What is the relationship between faith and hope to you then? If you have a faith that is, that you don't have to explain it, that it's real, that's active, with a God above, what is the relationship between faith and hope?
Well, I believe that, you know, it's really interesting. I was a little nervous at first when I saw the name of your podcast, because I have some beliefs about hope. that I was like, whoa, am I actually going to tell him this? And yes, I will.
I hope so. That's why we do it.
Yeah. So we'll probably go into this, will probably merge into what I think will be your last question. But when I first met my mentor, Gay Hendricks, his first words were, oh, you're a hope addict. It's taken it takes only a few days to get someone off of heroin. His PhD in psychology from Stanford. He says it takes sometimes a few days to get people off heroin. Sometimes it takes takes years to get off of hope. And I said, what are you talking about? Like, hope is my jam, right? Like, I've done a lot from hope. And what he was actually talking about is hope in the face of denial. For example, in my second bankruptcy, I kept hoping the check was going to come. I kept hoping something was going to come in and save me. I kept hoping that something was going to shift or change rather than having faith, right, that there was good in the world, looking at my finances, making plans and taking action, right? So that's what I mean. Hope can actually be dysfunctional if you are using hope to deny your current reality where you need to be taking action. So sometimes people go, oh, I hope, and trust me, like, I'm the biggest hoper there ever was. Okay. You probably couldn't get to be a bigger hoper, but that actually kept me stalled because I really believed that something was going to come in or someone was going to come in and save the day versus me actually taking some pretty vital action steps that I needed to take for my own well-being.
Well, there was a beautiful soul on here. Her name is Joy Saxton. She was on over a year ago. And she's just a wonderful person to listen to and learn from. And she was the very first person that had the courage when I asked this final question to say, I don't know if hope still wins, because hope is gritty. It's sweaty. It involves tears. It takes action. And it's really where that mindset of, hey, there's a lot of value in a human being. And there's a lot of empowerment and action is necessary in order to answer this question appropriately. She was really the first to bring that up to me. And I'll never forget it because I believe she's right. Well, Susie, thank you again for coming on here and talking about your company, which I will talk about more in the closing here, and point people to Poopery and Supernatural. And you mentioned a third there that I don't have in my notes. I apologize. What was the third company that you mentioned?
Yeah, you can find that on my website, susiebatiz.com. It's called Alive OS, for Alive Operating System. And Alive actually stands for Abundance Lives in a Vibration of Energy. And it's a personal development course. I won't be teaching it again, unfortunately, until June of this year. I'm taking some time off, but I've had a few thousand people go through it. People's lives radically change. We talk a lot about resonance dissonance, actually shifting and changing your life, not just living off hope, but actually going in and looking at your life as it is, making some action plans based upon your own resonance and your own cave of fear. What are those things you actually are terrified to do, but you actually can do? It's really fun. It's about between 8 and 12 weeks course, depending on how much I stretch it out or put it in. And it's a workshop. Like, it's a gritty, sweaty, about week 5, 6, there's lots of people crying, screaming, what'd I get myself into? This is horrible. But by the end, they're always like, oh my God, my life has changed. So and what I've done is I've been doing personal development workshops, all kinds of practices for 18 years. I've taken what I've learned from that and refined it down to really, you know, the kind of 8 steps that really shifted my life.
Beautiful. Well, if you're listening and if you've enjoyed or intrigued or interested in the, you know, short 30 minutes that we've talked to Susie here, Alive OS is out there. And as she mentioned, it won't be back until June. But you can go visit on her website, which we'll put in the show notes here. Well, Susie, final question for you. Susie, do you believe hope still wins? If so, why? And if not, why not?
I don't. I'm going to agree with your friend. Again, like I said, I believe hope with faith, yes. Hope with action, yes. Hope with facing reality, yes. I believe that wins. Hope used so that you can stay in denial about making changes in your life and actually coming from an empowered place, I do not think wins. I think it's a delusion. So you know, what I hope for you to do today, if anyone's out there, and if you are in one of those gnarly, really horrible situations that we can find ourselves in life, is that you actually can put hope together with faith, faith that you have the ability through higher power, your relationship to higher power, through yourself, whatever you believe in, that you can actually make choices and start getting yourself out. I believe that wins.
Beautiful.
For sure.
That's why we do this. We have people with tons of wisdom, tons of experiences that have led you to what you see in the world today. And Susie, thank you for your time here. It's greatly appreciated.
Thank you, Ben. What an honor.
Thank you for tuning in to today's episode of Hope Still Wins. If you haven't already, please subscribe or follow the show wherever you listen to podcasts. If you enjoyed this conversation, please consider leaving a 5-star review on Apple and join the community over on Instagram at Hope Still Wins. Well, that's it for today, my friends. As a reminder, make sure you check out Susie's companies, Poopery, Supernatural, and Alive OS. Thank you again for listening to this episode of Hope Still Wins. I'm your host, Ben Higgins. And hey, let's talk next week.